like you introduced Trent Alexander-Arnold and Jadon Sancho to the game, and recently featured in the Nike England shirt advert.
Working with brands which I grew up wearing to now actually shooting for them and collaborating with them on massive worldwide projects is surreal. Being in a cubicle, walking out, and like you hear Rashford, and it's just like, it's just stuff like that. It's just Mason Mount holding a door open for you. It's just never ever would I've ever imagined stuff like that.
So do you think there are many misconceptions maybe about blind football?
People say, you know, how, well, blind people on a football pitch is going to be smashing into each other. But actually the skill level and the kind of the intricate rules are really smart. I came onto the pitch and about 30 seconds ago, probably less, we had a corner, and I walk over to the corner and the coach is shouting, let the team take it.
I've got to talk to you about the Tough Mudder, especially as you're the youngest blind person to have completed it.
The first thing that they said to me across their mind was, we didn't know what type of life you were going to end up having in terms of, will you be able to work? Will you be able to get educated?
Yes, people, welcome to the Football and Feelings podcast. It has been a couple of weeks, but thank you for joining me again. I am here with our guest for this episode. We're going to dive straight into it. He is an advocate for disability awareness. He's a TEDx speaker, a footballer in the Blind England setup. It's the ever so amicable Azeem Amir. Azeem, how are you, sir?
Hi, mate. I'm not too bad, thanks. How are you?
I'm brilliant, mate. I'm brilliant. How have you been getting on through lockdown 2? Because for some people, it's been a bit difficult. For some, it's been very busy. How's it been going for yourself?
Well, living up in Manchester, it feels like we haven't come out of lockdown since March. Like, we've always had some form of restriction or some form of something in place. So, yeah, I just hope that kind of this is that for lockdowns and turn of the new year, and we'll be hopefully back to some form of normality. It was good news about the vaccine coming out, so fingers crossed like that starts to kind of pave the barrier of getting us back to some form of normal.
Yeah, let's hope so. Have you been able to keep up like football training throughout lockdown somehow?
Yes, but it's been a bit slightly more different to what I would have done kind of on the day to day normally, like in terms of just kind of a lot of training on your own and to keep yourself kind of interested and quite motivated. It just has meant training in a different way. So I've done a lot of kind of things, not necessarily just football, more things around it. So a lot more running. Done some work on a tandem, which is something that I've never done before,
nice.
And even boxing. So just kind of like varying it up to keep myself going. But I've had a really, really good few months of training and just enjoyment as well. Like sometimes when you're in the middle of football season and or you're prepping, you forget to like enjoy the training. And I definitely have done a lot more of that this year. But I'm ready to get back with the team and back with the coaching staff now on the pitch. And yeah, hopefully some games, because we ain't played since February.
Oh wow. Wow, that's an absolute age. Let's dive into it then with some football chat. I want to find out when your sort of passion for football began and how you were introduced to blind football, because it's a setup that I don't really know about in terms of how accessible it is to people around the country.
So in terms of like blind football itself, it's a five-a-side sport played by four outfield players who were blindfolds and one fully sighted goalkeeper. And it's played on a five-a-side pitch with boards going down the side of the pitch, which help to not only keep the ball in play, because obviously the players can't see the lines, so these boards will kind of stop the ball from going out and the ball will bounce back in, but also it helps the players in terms of like their hearing, because the ball will make a really distinct sound because there's ball bearings in the panels of it. So instead of like, people using their eyes in mainstream, they'll use it in blind football. Use your hearing. So that kind of really, really taps into a different sense. But yeah, it's kind of played up until from a grassroots level all the way up to the Paralympics and a European and world level, which I guess is kind of the pinnacle of our sport. But also in terms of people say, you know, how, well, blind people on a football pitch is going to be smashing into each other. But actually, the skill level and the kind of the intricate rules are really smart in terms of, because how do you know where the goal is? Where one of your coaches will stand behind the goal that you're shooting towards, and he'll kind of give you, and he'll be like an audible tannoy. And that's really helpful, because he'll say, you know, shift left, shift right. There's a player on your left. Beat him off his right shoulder. Shoot at my voice. And actually, it's really, really, it's a really cool way of playing football, I guess. A lot of people, I'd even go as far as saying 95% of the country don't even know what blind football is or have ever heard or seen it. So, you know, it's something that is in its infancy as a sport. But I think the more people that know about it and doing things like this, where people can even hear about it for the first time, is really good for the awareness of the sport, which will then hopefully lead to more people participating in it to actually take part, but also kind of the coaches and volunteers and goalkeepers and staff that are so important in the mainstream to helping it to develop as a sport.
Yeah, absolutely. I've seen on YouTube, I've seen you banging in a goal from a set piece. And one thing I didn't realise, you talking about the assistance you get from the sidelines, is I thought it was quite clever, really, how they knock the posts when you're on a set piece, so you know exactly like where to sort of aim between. And you had no problem slotting that one away.
No, it's again, like, people just think, the quality will be... but will be really rubbish, like people be walking into each other. But, you know, actually it's really, really kind of like, I use the word intricate in terms of, you know, tapping the post so that I can like picture where the goal is, so that I can like visualize it, and then using the noise of the defenders, which they need to say the word voy, V-O-Y, which means I go in Spanish. And what that will do is it will kind of give me a signal as to where the defender is. So I know that, okay, where to dodge the sound. So I'll dodge the sound and then strike it to where I think the goal is, or where my guide is behind the goal. And then, it's just really, really cool. And, you know, I started playing when I was at the age of 15, took it up as a hobby, and, you know, got signed up to a club when I was able to play open age, because blind football, because there's not a lot of participants in the players in the UK, you know, it's kind of an open age structured league. So playing, that's my first time, like putting on a kind of a shirt with your team's badge on it, with having a number, and walking on the pitch, and just the changing room banter and all that stuff that comes with it. So it was great to be part of the National League in England. And then from then I got asked to come down to some trials with the England blind football team. So they're based up at St George's Park. So I know that's an unbelievable facility. Like you're walking past having your dinner and Jordan Pickford's coming through, or you know, you'll be walking past Phil Neville and the top of Harry Kane. You know, it's like, it's just crazy. Like, never ever would I have imagined like being stood in a line, and behind me is like Rashford. The funniest one is like being in a cubicle walking out, and like you hear Rashford, and it's just like, it's just, you know, it's just stuff like that. It's just Mason Mount holding a door open for you. It's just never ever would I've ever imagined stuff like that happening. So we're very, very, we're very fortunate to have, you know, be at the home of English football. And it's great to have them unbelievable facilities, which then in turn kind of helps us to develop as a team. So I started training, and then I was very fortunate about 18 months ago to get a call up to the first team to actually go out and play. And the first cap I got was in Japan. So we travelled out there for a tournament, and ever since then I've been extremely lucky to have the honour and privilege to sing the national anthem, travel the world, play in different countries. And I'm still quite a newbie, so I'm in really early in my development, but it just gives you a little taste of what it's like to what kind of the hard work is for these days, these games, these kind of playing against the top players. And it's something that I really want to progress in.
Awesome. Yeah, I was actually going to ask, you sort of answered the question there. I was going to ask about how the setup works in terms of like the traditional way of playing for a club, and then you get picked up for international breaks and stuff like that. Is it very similar in that aspect, or is blind football a bit more internationally orientated?
In terms of the league structure, so the league kind of is based in Herefordshire in the UK, but internationally the camps will happen at St George's Park, and then the kind of the best players from the league will get picked to come up and train, and then there'll be either a tournament or a cup that we travel to as an England team, and then. Yeah, it's just it's a it's it's you'll be surprised at how technical and tactical it is. Like, even I sometimes when I hear about what other countries are doing to develop their nation to be kind of developing in the terms of the blind football, their rankings in the world and things like that, and the tactical and elements of it, their set piece routines, and you think there's blind football teams practicing dummies and during corners, and I'm thinking it's just like even that surprises me. Like, they're gonna knock a ball in so it goes through the legs of one of their own players, so that their defender who's on the outside has got a clear strike, and I'm like, it's just so crazy how tactical it is. But yeah, it really gets you thinking, which is good.
So do you think there are many misconceptions maybe about blind football to people outside of that realm?
I think a lot of it comes from their perceptions of blind people in society. Like, a lot of people see blind people, or they don't even see blind people, they see like a white stick or a guide dog, and they think, okay, so this poor guy's probably got a less of quality of a life than someone who could see. And it all starts with that. People, where do people mainly come across someone who's blind? Well, it's probably like in a train station or a bus station or in the shops, and you see someone like struggling because of how big a train station is, and you think, oh yeah, poor guy, and then you automatically link that into their life kind of outside of that, where you think, okay, they probably struggle with to find a job, struggle with education, struggle with doing anything social, and that's the picture that's painted within people, within society, subconsciously. I don't actually think they mean to do it, but it just automatically one links to the other, and that's just how they perceive it. But it's a lot, I think, then that I guess is replicated across all disabilities. Someone who's hearing impaired, someone with a learning difficulty, someone with a physical impairment, you think, oh, that's it, and never ever would they think, okay, this guy's got a white cane or a stick who's walking through a train station, he's never they think, okay, poor guy, but actually he's about to get the train station to the airport, and then he's going to go travel to Argentina for 3 weeks to represent his country playing football. Never ever that would, I don't think, crosses people's minds. But hopefully times are changing, and people's thoughts and thought processes are developing to be a bit more open, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. We'll definitely come back onto that subject, because I know that was the sort of premise of your TEDx talk, and I'd like to dive into that a little bit later. But sticking on to football at the right now, is there a standout moment for you in your football career so far? Obviously you've got years ahead of you that you're going to create new memories and achievements, but so far, is there one thing that really stands out?
Making my debut for the England blind football team, when I actually came on for 30 seconds. So we were literally the last 30 seconds of the game, and the manager says to me, okay, Seam, right, you're ready to come on. And everybody just, they're still to this day, or the whole team and the staff, just have a laugh about it, because I came onto the pitch, and there's about 30 seconds to go, probably less, we had a corner. And I walk over, I'm like, I'm so kind of on edge and so hyped up. And I walk over to the corner, and there's one of the other players, and the coach is shouting, let Azeem take it. And the guy that was taking the corner, he's like, right, just take it easy. Come and stand behind me. You're gonna just, and then he just knocks the corner in front, and then just stands there. Wastes 30 seconds and that's it. I probably got one touch of the ball rolling it to him on the corner, and that's it. But it always makes me laugh to think that's where it all started. And now as times have developed, now I'm coming on to actually make a meaningful impact, to play big chunks of games, and that's only going to get that's only going to kind of grow and grow as time passes on. So yeah, that was a surreal feeling, and it is quite funny actually to say that. I still class it as an unofficial debut. I don't even class it as a debut. Deep down, I'm not even classing that.
That's all right. I think you can still count it. Debut's a debut. But what's the training regime like at England camps then? And obviously, like you said, they're at St George's Park, and I'm sure they're very intense whilst you're there.
And so, in terms of the camps, so we usually meet for 3 to 4 days, similar to like what the first team, the men's first team do. So we'll turn up on a Friday, and there'll usually be a team meeting. And then we'll do a training session in the evening, and then that will then tailor into either some form of fitness testing or working on, I guess, a bit of an outside aspect, whether that be S&C or even what's being incorporated now, a lot to do with psychology. So we'll have a session with a psychologist or a video analyst who will go over sort of kind of what we're trying to achieve in that camp and how we can achieve it through like wider knowledge, whether that be through mindset, whether that be through descriptions of how of footage of how other teams are playing, or the type of role or the type of topic that we want to work on that weekend. So that'll be the Friday. Saturday we'll usually do a double session, mixed in with some form of testing or some form of work around a workshop, whether that be to do with mindset, whether that be to do with going back and kind of checking in with the players, because our players are dotted all around the country, from kind of the northeast to down to Portsmouth to Manchester to Liverpool. So the players, when they come together, it's just nice to actually catch up to see how everybody's doing in life, because you know the blind football is kind of semi-professional, so a lot of the lads have got things going on alongside it, whether that be studies, whether that be work, whether that be running their own business. So they do football alongside that, because you know it doesn't pay to the extent where you can use it as a full-time job. You need other things to rely on. So the only way I can say it's like women's football in its early stages, and that's where disability football and blind football is at the minute. In fact, if anything, blind football is slightly ahead of disability football, because a lot of that comes down to the fact that it's in the Olympics and Paralympics, so having that you know that opportunity to win a well go to an be quite kind of qualify for an Olympics Paralympics and also get a medal, it kind of gives you a bit of a and a bit of added exposure. So you know, that form of when we're back at camp is replicated to really make the most of the time that we have, and whether that be through sessions, whether that be through walkthroughs and working with different coaches, physios, you know, it's quite an intense, but it's definitely worth it. I just wish our budget allowed for more camps, because that's where we really develop when we're as a team. And then away from that, we use kind of a heart rate based system, which are little monitors and GPS units, which we all wear when we train in our home areas. So we have a set plan to do away from camps, and that'll entail like football training or strength training, or sometimes even recovery training, for a certain sessions for a certain amount of time for per day, or kind of we'll have structure as to what we have to do to keep us ticking and what our targets are, and the monitors will track all that data, send it back to the analysts to make sure that everybody's kind of pulling their weight outside of the camps, to make sure that when we do get to camp, we're not worried about kind of if players have been training, because we know that players have hit their targets, they're ready to go. We don't have to worry about kind of dry skills. We can really focus on the tactical elements and, you know, set pieces and the I guess a team tactical structure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sounds really interesting. And it, like you say, it sounds very similar to the sort of treatment I imagine the first team gets. And also with you, because you're in what seems like I said, I don't know much about the blind football world, but it seems like the England setup is pretty up there, especially in terms of like facilities and stuff like that. And I've seen that you've had like some advantages off the pitch involved in the team, such as like you introduced Trent Alexander-Arnold and Jadon Sancho to the game, and recently featured in the Nike England shirt advert. So you're obviously doing incredible things on and off the pitch.
Oh yeah, so I've had some unbelievable experiences that have come alongside me playing, and it's even to be on this podcast, you know, you never think that as a the opportunities that you get outside of football, a lot of it does feed in through you doing well at football, and that's something that I've learned in terms of the better you do on the pitch, the better opportunities you'll get off it, and in terms of working with some of the pro athletes and footballers like. Your Sancho's, yeah, Gerrard's, Trent Alexander-Arnold. You know, it's been great to actually get the blind football into the mainstream, because I think that's something that people, they don't even think about. You know, they're professional footballers, and that it's probably never ever crossed their mind, how does a blind person ever play football? And you know, even though there's an actual England team who travel the world. Yeah. It never would come across people's minds that there are actual people who can't see you right, who are also playing football at the top of our level, the same way that they are representing their country, putting the three lines on. So getting them to experience what it's like, and then to appreciate the challenges that blind people face off the pitch, to then, you know, see them expressing themselves on it. I think that's what really hits a chord with them as professional footballers. So it's been great to get that exposure, and also working with the big brands such as Nike and others. It's great for myself, and also for them, for myself, in terms of working with brands which I grew up wearing, to now actually shooting for them and collaborating with them on massive worldwide projects. It's
baller moves.
Surreal. Surreal. Honestly, it is. It's stuff that I never even could imagine. And this year has been incredible for some of the experiences that I've been able to do in terms of the kit launch, and you know, working with some of the other England footballers from around the country. But also for them, you know, it shows that, you know, society is moving forward, but also the brands are opening their horizons in terms of spreading the word of disability football. And you know, another unbelievable project that Nike have currently been working on is creating a boot for cerebral palsy footballers, and it's a boot where it's adapted to allow those with cerebral palsy or a physical limb impairment to be able to comfortably wear a boot, in terms of to allow it to be adapted so that they don't have to do their laces. Because, you know, a story that I once heard kind of a few years ago was a mother of a young boy, and she was like, you know, my son loves to play football, but he doesn't go to away games. And I was like, how come your son doesn't go to away games? And she went, it's because that when he's at home, his parents were there, his mum and dad are there, and if his laces get undone, we can tie him up for him, and he only feels comfortable with his mum and dad tying him up because he can't do his own laces. So he doesn't travel to away games because a lot of the time his mother and father were working. And I just thought, you know, that should never ever be a barrier for someone who doesn't go to football or train football just because, or that they feel uncomfortable with them tying their own laces. And, you know, and it was amazing that Nike then, not only kind of through myself, but also through learning more about the game and what cerebral palsy football needed, were able to then develop something like that for them, to allow them to be able to compete, to play, to train, whether it be a recreational level or an elite level, but to not have any barriers, and having a boot that the heel flips down, the laces are already tied, so it's a strap that goes around the boot, with this really, really high level of innovation. Is this really, really good for the game and for the players and for the next generation, who now don't have to worry about how they'll be able to tie their boots? They can now worry about and concentrate about playing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. See, that's exactly the sort of thing that a lot of people don't think about. They don't think about those minuscule barriers, but they sound minuscule to us, but to others, they're not minuscule. So it's really great to hear that perspective. And also, some of what you said there is a massive credit to yourself for how sort of hard you've worked and how hard other people work to get to where you are. Because it seems like you've sort of thrived with just sort of accepting what you can do. But has there ever been stages in your life where maybe you've struggled to accept like the cards you've been dealt, or have you always been able to embrace it?
I think in terms of because me being born with visual impairment meant that I actually believe that I was much more luckier than a lot of other people. You know, there's some people who have been fully sighted up until either a young age or their teens, and they then lose their sight for no apparent reason within the space of a week or two. And genuinely, I've come across people who are like that. There's a lad in our team who up until the age of 17 was living his normal life, fully sighted, and then started to lose his sight randomly through a genetic kind of disorder. And he had to then adapt the whole of his life to living without sight, something that he relied on every day of his, you know, 17-year life. And it was, you know, I always almost think I'm lucky to be that was born the way I am, so that I have adapted to live independently, to have these little kind of mechanisms around the house to allow me to, and just thought process, you know, little adaptations that I can go about doing my own thing without having to rely on anyone. Because, you know, that's something that a lot of people perceive blind people do, like, or disabled people, you know, they have to have someone with them. But I'd say a high majority of the blind football team now, like, we have got, live on their own. Like, they live independently, and they live with their families, in terms of, like, they've got kids, they've got wives, they've got jobs. But, you know, initially when I was the first child of my parents, and the first thing that they said to me across their mind was, we didn't know what type of life you were going to end up having, in terms of, will you be able to work? Will you be able to get educated? Like, we definitely knew we couldn't drive. Like, that was one thing we knew. but in terms of everything else, we weren't sure, because it was just that uncertainty. But then pushing me to from a young age to take up every opportunity, really, then I think allowed me to flourish in terms of getting older and growing up and maturing at quite an early age compared to others. You know, being 21 and having achieved what I've achieved already, I don't really reflect as much as I should do, but sometimes you just got to think, you know, I've come a long way from where I started, being in mainstream education as the only disabled person in primary school, high school. You know, it was a big challenge. But to come out of that, and to get to where I am now, I'm really proud of the journey that I've been on. But I also know that the power that I can have on others, and that's something that through working with young people in particular, I've realized that, you know, the power that you hold is really kind of unlocked. Like, you don't actually realize how much power or influence you can have on someone's life until you have a chat to them, or they hear your story, or they ask you a question, and you leave them with something that sticks with them for a long, long time. And that could hopefully kind of change their perception of life and society. And yeah, I just kind of, I'm generally very, very, feel very, very lucky. Like, you'd think, you know, blind person says he's lucky to be blind, and you think, is he off his head? But I actually think I'm generally lucky, because there's people out there who are going through much, much more greater struggles than what I have. And you know, if you look at it in perspective, the year that we've had in terms of the COVID pandemic, you know, people have lost their lives, and people have got now kind of have suffered a lot through that. And I'm really lucky to have good health, good wealth, have family, friends, work, football. You know, you think, actually, we're so much lucky compared to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's incredible that you take that outlook. Yeah, perspective definitely helps you sort of appreciate the things that you've got. But there must be some things, like, I imagine it's been a long and ongoing process, maybe to, like, trust your other senses and do what you can to get around with certain things. Like, when we spoke on the phone the other day, we spoke about, like, able-sighted people sometimes feeling disorientated. Maybe, let's say, someone's in, like, a city centre, for example. But if something like that happens to you, are you able to, like, to keep yourself calm and to then sort of make a plan from there? How does that work?
I think a lot of it comes from, like, kind of getting lost in an empty room, in terms of just, like, trying to figure out where you've left things in a room. Like, obviously, the amount of times I've left my keys somewhere, and and you're like absolutely going mental in terms of like trying to remember every single last place that you left your keys and just trying to figure stuff out. Like, now that little thing, that AirPods, they're great, but the second that you drop one, and you're like, you haven't like scoured the floor, and you can't see what's going on, and you're trying to feel to find it. It's just, then that leads to like, I don't know, you walk into a brand new room and you're like, can't find the light switch, or you can't find, you know, something that you've left on the ground, or you walk into something. Then you try to use that to adapt your life to then the outside world, where you're like, okay, if you lose your bearings, or you lose your orientation, or you lose your sense of direction, you know, figure out ways, you know, like, when growing up, when I was like really young, my parents would try and get me like things that could like stimulate me in terms of like lights or something that I could feel and touch. And obviously I couldn't see what was around me, so instead of bringing it up from my like feeling around, I'd like lay on the floor, and instead of like being able to look at it, pick it up with my hands, I'd like feel around with my feet, grab it between my legs like that, bring it up to my hands, grab it like that, and then that's how I bring it up to my hands. Do you know what I mean? Like, and it just shows that even at such a young age, you were then just tapping into other senses, and that in sense was feel, but then you're sort of like you're hearing and stuff. And it's just kind of, you know, it's just different ways of working that people just might not realize in the mainstream, because they've never really had a conversation with someone who got a disability or who's blind or some form of just impairment. But actually, just like my mates look at me like live a normal life. If anything, I get the most grief out of everyone, because they're like, right, okay, does all these motivational talks and everything, but you can't swim six lengths of a swimming pool, you know, that's no excuses, Eve. It's really good. I'm lucky to have a great supportive network around me.
Yeah, that's very important. Also, that tongue-in-cheek banter, that goes a long way, I think, in boosting morale sometimes. I hope this isn't like overly trivial sort of questions, but I'm curious to understand, and I think it'll benefit the listeners to understand how you get by doing sort of little tasks, again, that we take for granted, such as like cooking, traveling, if you're using your phone and stuff like that. I hope you don't mind me asking. I'm sure people ask you this sort of stuff all the time, but I think it'll really benefit myself and the listeners to understand that.
Personally, I'm proper lazy, so I'll warn you. I'm probably the wrong person to ask about this, because I'm really, really lazy. But like I live at home at the minute, so actually I'm quite lucky to have my mum who cooks for me, and yeah, she kind of look after me really well. But in terms of people, little adaptations that that even I come across on a daily basis, where like people are like, okay, so when you're pouring a cup of tea, how would you do that? And it's like, you get these little devices where they clip onto the end of a cup, and they've got little prongs coming down. And what happens is when the water touches the prong, it'll start to beep. And that stops you from the water overflowing the cup. And it's actually really crazy, because there's two prongs, one that's slightly longer and one that's slightly shorter. And the reason why they have them, like two sizes of prongs, one's for your water, which will give you a certain type of beep, and then you put your water down, then you've got your tea bag in, of course, but then you've got your milk, and then the second prong goes to your milk. It'll make a different sound when you hit that, when you're just about to tip the cup. And even things like that just amaze me, that people have gone to that length to think of things like that. Also, like when you're boiling something, or there's a little disc, because obviously you can't see the bubbles when something's boiling, but there's a little disc which will start to rattle when something's boiled, and all sorts of other adaptions, you know. But also just common sense, you know, like why would you get a block of cheese and get a grater and grate cheese when you can get pre-grated cheese, you know? It's like little things like that, of just finding different ways around it. And there's lots of adaptive kitchen equipment, like talking scales, and obviously you've got like kind of like, now you've got like readers that read kind of in terms of like ingredients within I guess YouTube's helped a lot in terms of like, if someone wants to cook a recipe, they don't have to have a recipe book anymore, and then they have to have someone to read it. They now stick on a YouTube video for that, and that's what a lot of people in the mainstream do, you know. So things like that, in terms of getting around and using my phone, people like generally get asked the question, like, can you use email? I'm like, been using email since I was about 11 years old, you know, and people are like, but how? So, you know, in terms of my technology, my iPad, my phone, my computer, like they're adapted so that there's like a screen reader on it. So as I type, it'll read me out what I'm typing or what's on the screen. And same with my phone, like, oh God, I hope there's nothing dodgy in my phone now. But like, when I have my phone, and what I can do then is it will read me out what's on my what's kind of on my screen. So I brush my finger over it, and it'll be like
Messenger, WhatsApp, Messenger. Messages.
Got it.
It'll read me out what's on my phone, which will then allow me to be able to, because you can't see it, but you can hear what's going on. Sometimes I think about this, like if you're on a train and you've got to keep the volume quite low, and it goes really fast because you keep the volume quite low, because that especially next to you is getting a good hearing of your texts and everything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And emails, yeah. And texts.
Quite hard to be secretive, so, I suppose.
Yeah. But the reason why, but there's a way around that is because blind people like train themselves to be able to hear the voice really fast. So it's like, blah, 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 and it's like no one else can understand it apart from you, because you trained yourself to hear it at a really quick volume, a really quick speed. So you can hear and what. It's like, hello, my name is Azeem, in normal, and my phone read, hello, my name is Azeem, now I'll still be able to understand it. And it happens a lot with like audiobooks now, like people will be listening to, you know, books, how do you read books? Well, everything's either ebook now or audiobook. Yeah. So get an audiobook and I'll stick it on like times three speed, and I'll fly through books in like a few hours, whereas it might take someone a day or two, because I'm just used to taking on that information audibly so fast. Mm. So yeah, but there's all sorts of like adjustments and things that kind of help me that people just take for granted, you know, like they might take something which they think is really easy, but for me, like the little things might be the biggest challenge. But yeah, it's just kind of finding ways. But you know, at the same time, I look back at, you know, a small challenge for me might, you know, something that I might find easy might be really difficult for someone who's hearing impaired, you know. Or someone who's like got another form of impairment or struggle or disability. So, yeah, there's always a positive that can come out of it.
Mm-hmm. What about school and university for you? Because they are years that, regardless of whether people enjoy them or not, they will always remember them. So how was that for you, especially uni? Because there's things that able-sighted people struggle with, like finding research, referencing and writing essays and stuff like that. How was that experience for you? I know you've recently finished your undergrad, but did you have like adequate support there, or were you sort of able to do a lot of these things on your own?
Oh, I was very, very lucky that I had, kind of going up to school, like my parents were given the option to either send me to like a specialist blind school or a mainstream school. And like, imagine at the age of five, someone saying to you as a parent that you've got to send your child to a boarding school where you'll see him, pick him up, drop him off on a Monday, see him on a Friday. It just didn't make sense to my father. And he was like, okay, actually send him to a mainstream school where he can get the right support would be more important. So I kind of I'd worked with a lady who supported me from nursery all the way up to when I left my GCSEs. And she kind of supported me in terms of like, she'd dictate to me what was written on the board, I'd talk and she'd write stuff down. She'd be able to help me in terms of allow me to like learn Braille, learn mobility, and like that, having that one person there to allow you to still fit into a mainstream environment was really, really amazing, I guess. And when I went through to up to high school, you know, they'd try and adapt things in a way where, you know, I'd still be able to join in, and they put a bell in a ball, or they put a light in it that I couldn't like somehow see the light, or just find a ways around where I could still join in. And just my mates, like, we just have a really good laugh at it. Like, I still remember like one time playing dodgeball and being the last one in, and I was like, everyone was just on the side, I was really going mental, because I was just guessing. I was literally just guessing where this ball was coming from, trying to dodge, trying to do a few roly-polies, just trying to get away from dodgeballs that I couldn't see that were coming at me. And everybody was just going ballistic on the sides. They just couldn't believe that. How has Azeem ended up being the last one in when he can't even see what's going on? And just moments like that, that's what ended up, like people just having a really good laugh, you know. And that's just that's just how I go about it, like go-karting and skiing. Like, I remember going skiing and like, they were like, everything, I was doing really well up until like they put a lot of poles in that you have to go in and out of. And I'm every single, like, I didn't even realize the poles were there. Wiped, knocked every single one out, ended up on the floor and everything like, going, it's just a really hilarious. But just things like that, that I remember, you know. And but it's just like, Azim, okay, we're going go-karting today. Okay, Azim, you're coming with us. I'm like, okay. Don't know how we got it, but we just find a way around it, and kayaking and yeah, and just like my mates coming and experiencing them things with me, like, okay, so how are we gonna get Azim to do this? Or okay, it's gonna be quite difficult, but we'll find a way to support him to do it. And yeah, I'm really lucky, and I think that's why all my mates kind of respect me a lot for that, in terms of like never being able to say, no, I can't do it, I don't wanna do it. Because I'll literally do everything. Like, and then sometimes I think like, I can't see it and I'm doing it, and then you're like, nah, I don't want to do it, I feel a bit scared. And it's just like, you know, it's just, you know, it's like, come on, if I can do it, you can definitely do it. And taking that attitude, I think a lot of people then get a good vibe from like being around me, because it's quite kind of there's that positivity, I guess, and just like that taking up every opportunity, because it's definitely played a big role in my life. So so yeah, it's just kind of then now transferring that into the next, in terms of what you said about university, you know, that was the same, having some great opportunities I was supported well in terms of academically, you know, finding different ways around, instead of like, having lectures written down on paper, I'd type them, or dictaphones, or working with, my study support would kind of, help me to locate references. But everything's online now. So, so bad me saying this, but like in 4 years of being at uni, I've not took out one library book, and that's because everything's online. Like literally, Google Scholar, like everything you can just find on at a touch of a click. So that wasn't too bad. And now that I'm kind of currently on my master's, and then once that's done, it'll be all education will be done, and then it'll be time to move on to the next chapter, hopefully.
Oh, mate, incredible stuff. Incredible. It's great to hear about things that you're achieving off the pitch. And let's delve into some more of those, such as the TEDx talk. That must have been a really cool experience. I really enjoyed it, because you spoke a lot about sort of how the initial judgments people make about others, especially those with disabilities. And I really liked how you come across, you want to be in a room for the right reasons. You don't want to be there just because they want someone like a blind person to be there. Like, you're there on credit. Do you know what I mean? And I really found that interesting throughout that TEDx talk.
No, I really appreciate that you that took the time to listen to it. I mean, it's that opportunity came, and I remember like going through college and A levels and watching TED talks on my part of classes, and then like, it's just surreal the fact that I was on this stage where it like it'd be on a YouTube clip followed by a TED, and it's just I never ever would have thought that people would want to listen to my story and hear what kind of some of the experiences that I've been through. But as I've slowly started to realize, you know, a lot of people who either go through disability, they're not for them it's a very big part of their life, in terms of they don't really want to talk about it, because some people feel a bit insecure about it and not too confident, or they don't open up about you know, particularly hidden disabilities, because they want to be treated as normal. And I probably went through a bit of a phase where, you know, I didn't want to speak about it openly, because I thought, you know, it's better left untouched, or, you know, it's just going to open a can of worms and a load of questions. But then slowly, when I started to accept it, like, this is how I am, probably not going to get my sight back anytime soon. Like, I'm just going to, this is the way I am, this is how I was born, and I adapted my life to it. Now it's just about kind of just living the rest of my life to the best that I can with like the cards that I've been dealt with. And if anyone's got a question about it, let's answer it. Let's talk about it, because, you know, actually it might help them to think slightly differently about me as a person. And yeah, that's been a really good journey that I've kind of been on, in terms of just not necessarily accepting it, but then realizing the power that opening up or having a conversation can have. And now that's what I really advocate for, is like opening up and having conversations about things that people might feel are a struggle or are a challenge. And the TED Talk really allowed me to put that point across, which I think has been really, really well received, and hopefully that kind of continues. And you know, I look back at it, and I used to be quite like a shy person growing up, in terms of not wanting to be the person getting selected or talking, because you know, I was just not very confident. But now we've been talking all this time, and approach you the ears of all your listeners, but it's just like it's just kind of just personal development and growth goes a long way to then you know, opening a lot of doors for me outside, you know, in terms of from TED Talk has led to a lot more a wider reach in terms of my message, and people wanting to get in touch and hear what I do, and yeah, just opportunities, and every day it's feels like there's a brand new thing that pops up, and some are just completely random, and some it's just, yeah, I really enjoy the work that I do in terms of you know, the Learn With S stuff now, and it's really exciting to see where it can lead in the future.
Incredible stuff. I've got to talk to you about the Tough Mudder, especially as you're the youngest blind person to have completed it at that point anyway. So that must have been so difficult, because like the parts of it, you're like stepping down on like bits of scaffolding and stuff like that, like dragging yourself underwater, obviously everything soaking wet and covered with mud. How was that experience?
Honestly, I still got like, I'm definitely mentally scarred from that experience. I still get flashbacks of just getting, it's just horrible. Honestly, it was a buzz, but I would never ever do it again. It's just optionally, I just wouldn't do it again, because it's just so cold. Like, I just remember cramping up after having to swim through a pool of ice where you've got to like submerge yourself. And I was like, oh yeah. The craziest thing for me was I couldn't see the next obstacle. So like, the guy who I was doing it with who's my old PE teacher. You couldn't actually see, he would like describe to me the next one. I'd think, this won't be too bad. Just climbing up a 10-foot set of hay bales and then like a swing off it into some muddy water. And then he's like, yeah, we're just gonna like, so the next one is even, it's just gonna be a little climb, and then it's gonna be a slide into a pool of ice, pool of water, and you're just gonna then walk out. And I'll be like, okay. Turns out it's like you climb up 10-foot like scaffolding, then you lie down and you submerge yourself head like to your head under water that's got ice cubes in it. There's a truck that's got refrigerated ice cubes that they're cutting open, and they're throwing bags of ice into this pool, and then you've got to fully submerge yourself in like under a barrier and come back out. And it was just like, oh my, it was just a shock. Everything was just a shock. Like, I'd do it, everything was just a shock. You're like, right, there's some fences, there's some they're going to run through this, going to run through the next obstacle thing, and it's just a run through, but there might be some wires that hang down, and they might shock you. And I'm like, all right, turns out there's like electrocuted wires. Whenever you hit them, you just get a massive shock that like goes through to your teeth. And I'd be like, I was just like, and he just said to me, like, if you fall, I'm not going to be able to come back for you. Right. Okay. But yeah, it was a really good experience. But the whole reason why we did that was to raise kind of money for charity, for the cause of the Royal Eye Hospital here in Manchester, who have done so much great work for myself and, you know, so many others around the region, in terms of giving them the best possible opportunity to see. So yeah, the work they do is incredible, and I've got so much time for them, and I wanted to give something back to them. So yeah, that was an amazing experience, but also something that was really close to my heart. And I've supported that charity now for a number of years, doing a lot of different things, and yeah, every time I work with them, they just I just always think back to how my parents felt when I was a baby, and they needed that support from the right people, and they got it through the Children's Hospital and the Eye Hospital in particular. So yeah, very grateful for the work they've done.
Great stuff. Go check it out, people. When you are completing a challenge like this, or whether you're like preparing for a football game or something like that, where do you sort of take most of your enjoyment from? Because a lot of people, it's all about the process, but for others, it's all about the end result and trying to get the win. But for you, yeah, what's it all about for you?
For me, it's like the people around me, like 100% it's the people around me, like the staff, the players, the younger players, the older players, everyone who's like trained up to get to where they are now. It's seeing them like flourish and seeing them support me when I'm doing well. Like, they know that, you know, it's not been an easy road. Like, it's you don't just get given success on a plate. Like, it's taken a lot of hard work. Like, literally straight after this, we'll be going out training, and it's lockdown. We're training on an 11-a-side pitch that's not been moored for 5 weeks thanks to grassroots football being shut. It's like an 11-a-side pitch in the middle of a park, and it's just like, it's just me and a coach, and it's going to probably be absolutely teaming it down, and sometimes it's about -3, and it's like, what are we doing here? But all that hard work is then leads to then the enjoyment of stepping onto a pitch, succeeding, doing well, and seeing the people around you do well. And that's something that I honestly like is more important than even the final result. Like, the seeing the hard work paying off of the people around you, and doing it, winning it as a team, or doing well as a team. It's all about that, and that's something that I've then taken into the other aspects of my life, of especially when it comes to like entrepreneurship. Like, you doing well as an individual, fine, it's great, you know, you do well, make a lot of money, but having people around you as a team succeed and seeing them do well alongside you, you know, it just makes it even sweeter.
Mm-hmm. Unbelievable. Okay, right, before we wrap this up with some quick fire questions, we need to delve into the program you're currently creating. If you could talk us through it, sort of advocating disability awareness and team cohesion programs, if the stage is yours.
So in terms of what I do now is, over the last year and a half, I've been working with a small team to create a way in which wider society can gain a better knowledge of what life is like to live with a disability, and how those with disabilities can be better supported by those in the mainstream. And I created this program called Learn with ESS, which stands for Education, Sport and Speaking. And the aim is to run practical workshops with the emphasis on working as a team and the enjoyment that comes with team building, team bonding, and kind of all the skills that come with that, but also making it very meaningful and an educational process. So in terms of, we do some work around opening up a conversation in a classroom surrounding disability, and whether that be through kind of a bit about sign language, a bit about braille, a bit about invisible disabilities and learning difficulties. So starting up a conversation, which then that's the education side of it. The sports side of it is, we'll go into a sports hall or a facility, and we'll do some Paralympic sports, so blind football, goalball, to actually experience what it's like to play a Paralympic sport with a form of disability. And a lot of it is to do with visual impairment. So for a lot of people, just put a blindfold on walking in a straight line is a challenge, and never mind like running through 8 players trying to score and trying to hack you down. You know, it's then that realization of how difficult it is, and the elite level, what that's like. And I guess then the appreciation of what a blind person can actually achieve, or a person with a disability can actually achieve. And then the speaking is, we get a motivational speaker in from the local community to kind of, as a sense of inspiration, to leave a long lasting message. And we'd offer these workshops to everyone from nursery age to those in all people's homes, like in terms of that's how the wide age range goes, and from a variety of different places, from educational institutions to schools to colleges to universities to corporate organizations, where we use it as like a real educational experience, but one that's really fun, really interactive, and one that leaves an experience that will last a lifetime, hopefully. So the aim is to address disability, but in a really fun and interactive, practical way. And my hope and my dream is to get my enthusiasm across to as many young people or individuals and participants of our programs as possible. And hopefully the program can grow and take and kind of, we can deliver these workshops in as many places across the UK as possible, and fingers crossed, global.
Oh mate, amazing. It's so great to see you're channeling your energy into something like that could really make a difference to other people. That pretty much covers everything that I wanted to throughout this podcast, but we will finish with some quick fire or long ball questions, that I like to call them, if you are ready to go with those.
Yep.
Okay, let's do it. Can you name one thing you want to do before you die?
Big question. I think in terms of traveling, like I'd love to travel and experience parts of the world that people have talked about, and then experience it firsthand yourself. and to see whether what people have said matches up to what's actually done there, you know, whether that be kind of people talking about, you know, life in areas where there's more poverty, but seeing like, you know, the little stories and connecting with those people, you know, to really experience what life is like for them and then see what life was like for me growing up. So yeah, I think traveling is a massive one, but and also all the experience that comes with that and all the memories, hopefully.
Mm-hmm. Lovely stuff. What about yourself are you most proud of?
I think sometimes I forget to like give myself like a bit of credit, but I think looking back at my development from like being a shy person to now like doing what I do, like I think just like how confident I've become. Like I never ever would have you know, I was very shy in front of a camera or taking pictures, you know, probably because I used to get grief for that. I literally could not smile. Like I had a really bad really bad smile, which has got slightly better now, but like everybody was just like having a proper giggle, like Zoom couldn't find a way to pull a proper smile. But yeah, it was just kind of that confidence now and that enthusiasm for doing something that I'm passionate about and believing in something that I really think is important.
Great stuff. Do you have any life regrets?
No, I don't have any life regrets. Great. Because so far I think I've taken every single opportunity, and I think that's something that that I think everybody should do. Like any opportunity that comes your way, just give it a go, and you never know what it can lead to. And hopefully that way of thinking I maintain and I keep on going with, because you know, you never know who you might meet or who you might come across or the impact you might have on another person. And yeah, I guess just the unexpected things are the ones that I feel are the things that I remember the most. So the things that you went into doing something one way and you came out doing like with a completely different outcome. And sometimes they work, sometimes they don't work, but it's all a learning process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And final question, what do you think 12-year-old Azeem would say to you now?
What do I think 12-year-old Azeem would say to me now? Probably like, back then I wanted to be like something in academic, like I wanted to be a lawyer, I wanted to do something in like business. Never would have thought that I'd be doing something that I enjoy and I'm passionate about and doing it like playing football and that being a profession. And never ever would have thought that sat in a classroom learning about biology and science that actually probably won't need any of this. It'll be more to do with like just doing a hobby that you enjoyed. That probably back then I didn't even know existed. Now you're playing it full time, and yeah, it's just that like it's everyone's dream to play football, represent the country, and I'm living that dream. So yeah, it's a real win-win for me.
Incredible, Azeem. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. I really appreciate it. I've learned a lot from you, and I'm sure the listeners will as well.
No, my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
No, the pleasure is mine, sir. And to the listener, thank you for tuning in to the Football and Feelings podcast. Give us a like, subscribe, depending on where you're watching or listening. But thanks a lot. I'll see you soon. Cheers.